1930, and I come up here and went to looking for work. And I had a brother working at the steel mill at that time, and put in for him, went down, applied for a job, and we did get a job. And at that time, was to study, work 3-4 days a week. And our wages at, in the finishing ship department was an average of 50 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And worked there for, I would say, 5-6 months. And business was bad. And went back to New Philly, I think it was for 3 months, and came back up here, and I've been here ever since.
But Newton Steel was your first job.
Right.
Was there any type of unions or anything?
No unions.
You worked
12 hours a day. They had two shifts in that department, in the shipping, finishing shipping department. They had two shifts a day. 6 a.m. to 6 p.m, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. If you didn't like it, you went someplace else, you looked for work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you didn't work to study at that time because at that time, depression, and you got 3-4 days a week, you were lucky. And you made enough money at that time that had a single and the board room was $8 a week. You stayed there and had a room and you eat your breakfast and they pack a lunch for you and come home, eat at night. You got that for maybe $10 a week the most.
And you, what did you make a week?
Well, you worked probably made about $6 a day. So if you work, if you're lucky, you got 5 days a week.
You make $30.
$30 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you didn't work. Sometimes maybe you worked 3-4 days a week, and that way you make too much. But in those days, like I say, you can buy a suit of clothes for $20-$25. Shoes, $3-$4. It was all different. The thing that buy wasn't, too much money, but you did was able to get by on that. Because I was depressed at that time. A lot of people were out of work.
We're glad to be working.
Glad to get anything. Yeah. This is much worse than it is now.
So this was more or less considered steady work.
And right. You had a job. This is
the thing.
Yeah. At least you had a job and you pay your room board and maybe had $5, $10, $15, $20 for your own personal needs.
The board and house packed your lunch and everything. Huh?
Mm-hmm. If you wanted it that way, if you didn't, well, naturally, you just want a room at that time, you get a room for 3-4 hours a month or a week. And eat out in restaurants. They had a restaurant at the mill, so you eat there too.
Mm-hmm.
That way, if you wanted to board a room, well, you could do that too.
How did you walk to work every day? Or?
No, they had a bus going down there. At that time, they had a bus going down, and then after you worked there a while, things got a little better. Otherwise, they had a car or something. That way, you'd carpool and go out the street, go on Elm Street there, someplace, and somebody would pick you up or by accident, or you had a ride, prearranged, meeting every morning, and then they'd take you back.
Mm-hmm.
They also had a bus running back.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, like in New Philadelphia, and that, like, what did your father do? How did he make his living?
Coal miner.
Was he a coal miner?
Mm-hmm. That was coal country. Still, not like it used to, it was then, but it was a coal mining area there. He worked, I would say he worked in the coal mines about 35 years. Then in 1930, he went to work for High Park. He finished out there and retired. He retired in 45.
Mm-hmm. That was the warriors through there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember their effects on its effects on Monroe when you were here?
The warriors, well, from, I would say 38 on, it was, from before 38, things weren't too good. But after they started to had more money in the budget for armament and so on, things picked up quite a bit. And after 38, things were going pretty good. And then the war came, naturally, things were real. Everybody, people like me went in service, jobs open all over, and things were real good. And after the war, things were real good. People were working, and I got home from service in 1945, and I bought this house in 46. And everybody's looking for some place to live. You know? Like, see, there was 12 million people in the service at that time, were drafted or volunteered or what. And they was leaving them out after 45, and I mean, then when the war was over, they start discharging everybody, and people were coming home. There were not too many stayed in service. Some did, but the great majority took their discharge. And
so times were relatively better than when I was.
Right. Things were good up till 54, 55, it started slowing down a little bit. The first 5-10 years after the war was over, things were real good. Cars were selling. The whole thing was for prosperity. Mm-hmm. We hit some low spots in the back.
But then again, when you were younger, when you were going to school and that, you had to walk to school, I presume? Or?
Well, we lived in a little coal mining town until I was 7 years old, and that was the first year in school, and that was in first grade. We walked better than a mile to school. And then after that, in 1919, we moved to New Philly, where we're at now, and we went to a parochial school, went to a Catholic school there, and for one reason, probably the parents wanted us to move to town, because the little town where we were, there's no church or anything there, no Catholic church. So we just moved within a block of school. So going to grade school, I walked a block, and then going to public high school, I walked about 6 blocks. So that was fairly easy. No need for buses. Of course, in those days, there wasn't any buses. No buses at all. You lived close enough to school, and that's really where school was. People moved in close and walked to school. I don't think there was too much buses till after the war. Maybe there were in rural areas. I don't know.
The people then, they wanted their children educated in high school, so they moved to where the schools were.
Right.
As you got to be a little bit older, in your teens maybe or so, what did you do for the work? Or how did you, get old? Did you work then, maybe part-time on a farm for some money?
No.
No.
We were, like I say, an old farm. My dad was a coal miner. We never lived on a farm or anything like that. Well, I lived there, like I say, when I'm 7 years old. We lived in a city about, I'd say 12,000, 14,000, something like that. That's where Woody Hayes got his start. I coached high school football.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I wonder if they played football for Woody. Jack Casanova was up Trenton. I used to coach Catholic Central. He's from my hometown, too. I knew Jack when he was in high school. He was a lot younger than me. Well, I feel that.
That's fine.
In the Grass Rail Bar on West Front Street.
After you left Newton Steel, huh? Mm-hmm. What bar was that?
Grass Rail.
Grass
Rail. It's no longer there. It's sold out to Pratt. It's It's next door there. So I guess where the state, what's the name of that bar? West Front Street there now. That was State Munch. State Bar?
Is it State Bar or Pete's and there's Red Noodle Pub?
No, oh. West Front.
Oh, West Front. I see.
So you got the Coney Island.
Yeah.
The next one.
Oh, yeah. I guess it is State Bar.
I think it's State Bar. See, and we were in the next place.
Oh.
And they moved it in. How the place is vacant now. It's got beautiful on one side and the other side's vacant. They put that game room in there and set the place on fire. See, I was in there with Frank Bellino from 36 to 41, I think it was. And Harold Clark brought Frank Bellino out. He came up there. We were in there until 1956.
Mm-hmm. So that was a little enterprise, huh?
Yeah.
How was downtown Monroe then?
Well, downtown
when you first opened your bar.
We were busy. I mean, this was Friday and Saturday nights where people were downtown at that time. And in the 30s, Saturday night was the night. Mm-hmm. Stores kept open on Saturday night. Then right afterward, they started to keep open on Friday night. So Friday night was a big night. Everybody worked in town, and people would come in, and they'd get their lunch. We also had a bar and restaurant there in Asheville. We would get sandwiches, food, and we had fish and stuff like that on Friday. And which made Friday a good day, but Saturday dropped off. And then after that, with the coming of the shopping centers and so forth, that's what really hurt. People didn't come downtown like they used to. In shopping centers and not sufficient parking. This is what happened.
So you think it was due to insufficient parking downtown?
Parking and the fact that you have development of shopping centers going north and south of the city.
Mm-hmm.
It took away from it, but I didn't think parking was one of the real reasons why. In my opinion, the real reason of the deterioration of downtown is insufficient parking.
Were the roads paved then? Oh. All the downtown roads?
All of them. When I came here in 1930, Monroe Street from front north was all widened. They brought fronts of stores. That happened before I came back. The bridge was in and everything else. But I, first place I lived was out north on those streets there, 3 or 400 block. And that wasn't completely. In other words, the sidewalks and everything weren't there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But that used to be just a two-lane road and a two-lane bridge.
Mm.
They widened that from there, clear out. That was practically complete in 1931.
Were there major department stores downtown?
Oh, yes. I think Penny's was here, Robert Klein's, F.W. Woolworth, Kresge's, around that time. There was quite a few. There was quite a few stores like that downtown at that time. Even the Kroger's and A&P were downtown at that time. That store's in the downtown area.
Hmm. And then after your bar, the Brass Rail, what did you do then?
Well, that's when I got into politics, and actually then had semi-retired. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and fool around here for about 5-6 years, and. Then I was a commissioner for four years. Then I ran for councilor and got that for 2 years. And then I got beaten in 1963. I ran for mayor and was elected mayor for 64-65. I got beat. Then in February 56, I went to work for the county as a county public guardian for indigent people, working with the Department of Social Services and Public Court. And I held that job till March of 82. I was 16, 17. And that's, I haven't been anything since.
I hate to keep going back to your childhood, but is there anything that sticks out in your mind about your childhood?
You understand that my parents were both immigrants, poor, didn't know the language. The only thing they knew right and wrong, if you did wrong, you found out about it quick. And worked hard and raised a family of eight. Proud of them for the fact that some grumbling, but my dad always seemed to be able to work. He always had work, never was on the dole of anything like that. And coal mining was hard work in those times. You went in a coal mine 7 o'clock in the morning, you get out about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're in there. That's a hard way to make a living.
Yeah.
If anybody earns their money, I think a coal miner does. Because it's dangerous, and it's all mechanized now, but at that time it was all pick and shovel. You would drill holes and put your dynamite in, and you had what to call a squib about this long. This is the last thing you did every day, and when you're ready to leave, you light that and run out and hit down, because when that thing let go, it knocked down a lot of coal.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, you'd go in and start over again.
Can you remember any cave-ins when you were young that you... Maybe.
Well, it was. I can only remember one, and that was a bigger mine that had a big explosion. I think there was about 8-10 miners got killed.
Uh-huh.
And that time I had a cousin. I was probably about 12, 15 years old. It was in the 20s, a big mine out there. And that's what they call coal dust, and it accumulates and everything, and it's a volatile thing, and if it gets enough air in the right thing, and there's a spark, she goes, and this blew the big fans out of it. They had a fan on to push air in and the other end, take it out, and that thing just went. And that's the only major explosion I can remember. But I don't know, maybe 6, 8, 10 kilo, whatever. I just forget.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite young at that time. But I remember I had a cousin. I lost a cousin, and another cousin was one of the ones who went to mine and tried to get him out. They were masked. And they put in, I think, birds of some kind. If the birds come flying out, you don't go in because there's gases in there that you couldn't take. So first of all, I get a gas mask and things like that. In those days, that's about it. These people went in there and tried to see what they could see, but it took them a couple of days because this would tear up the tracks and everything. Right? Just grind, put these tracks not a regular railroad track, it was a thinner gauge. It would take them, twist them up like crutches.
Mm-hmm.
Fearsome, because it was powerful. That's the only one I can remember that. It had them, but that's the only one I can remember. It was real serious. People were killed.
Mm.
They still have them around Pennsylvania. But these bigger mines were where I was raised, is all worked out. They have enough coal there for domestic use. In other words, maybe that's 3 of them there, and they'll mine enough coal to sell somebody, and that's it. The thing that's taken over now is the strip mines.
Yeah.
It's all stripped now. They get the shovels down there, and clear away a hill and get it to coal and go someplace else. Mm-hmm. Not too much coal in that area being coal in the mine the way it used to be in an entry and go on the side of the hill and dig it out. That sort of thing. Now they dig the hill down and get the coal. That's it.
What did your mother do? Was she a housewife?
Right, she was a housewife. That's never had a job.
Mm-hmm. You said they were both immigrants. Did they meet here or did
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they met here.
I see.
I had an uncle here. My mother came over and stayed with her aunt and uncle. My dad came over on his own.
On his own?
On his own. And, he first went to Colorado to work. He didn't like it out there, so he came back and settled down one there in New Philly, and that's where he met my mother, and we got married in 1899.
Did your father, he put passage on a ship, and did he come in through New York?
New York, yeah.
Did he have to go through the...
Oh, yes, he went through the Ellis Island, or wherever it is out there, what they call Ellis Island.
I believe it is Ellis Island.
I think it is Ellis Island. Well, they had to go through there and get screened and show their papers and shots and everything else.
Was there anyone else of your father's family that ever decided
that,
to come?
No. Not that I know. No, there wasn't any other of the family. I think he was around 20, 21.
But he had no job. He just come.
Just came, wanted to get out of where he was that time. He came from and I'll show you.
Okay.
My sister bought me this book for Christmas.
Mm.
This was written by a priest. Like they mentioned New Philly and Cape Breton, it's like that. I see here's trying to get, can't see. But these are in the Alps. This is what it says.
And that's a book on
it. It comes from that's Trent now, it's Trentini. This, at that time, you see, was Austria-Hungary, Austria-Hungary. That's what it was then. See, they fighting and they changed the, what, it's, at that time it was Austria-Hungary. Then Italy came in there, France in there, you know, Switzerland, and switched around, and but where he came from, they spoke Italian. German. And they spoke Italian there. And there were some Germans there too, see? Germans right in there too. So it was sort of a mixed up thing. But that's where my dad and my mother originally around Trieste, which is down further, but it's still in the Alps. They both came from pretty much the same location, but never knew any, never knew one another before they came to this country. Now it's remarkable those people come to this country. The idea of it is they worked hard, and my parents, no education. The only thing they had to do was work physically. It's the only thing they knew.
Mm-hmm.
So they do the best they can. They got a job in a coal mine where the wages were halfway decent. It's dangerous work, a lot dangerous then than it is now. Going back 50 years, those times they didn't have the mining regulations or anything else. And it was... a lot of minor injuries that you probably never heard of. But anyway, that's how they did it. And they used to get, to start out, I can remember, get about 75 cents a ton load of coal. They had a little cart and had mules to take them out. And your coal mine is an entry going straight through, like a street. And you've got streets going off the side, just like you have here. They go off the side and bring them out to the main entry, and they'd have, at that time, mules and ponies in there that pull out of the mine, and then they electrified it where they had these cars and pull them out. Patrick can take the miners in. The miners went in at those days on little cars. He's going to get off of his own street, we'll say, and went to work.
Mm-hmm.
Nighttime, they come off, pick them up, and take them back.
Your recollections of working at the steel company, I imagine it must have been hot in there.
I didn't work where they made steel. I worked in the shipping finishing department, where you inspected it and stamped it, whether you was an inspector or you worked there. This sheet of steel, they'd cut it, and then you would inspect it. And then it would go, next door was shipping, and a big shipping area there where the trucks could pull alongside and the train come in where they could load them up and away they went. And the making of steel was at that time a tough job. I tell you, I knew it worked there. I said, 5 years. They had a set of rolls, two sets of rolls, and they had in the back of each set of rolls, it was what we'll call an oven. The sheet, this piece of steel would come through this, get to a certain degree, and I would be there, you would be pushing it in, I would be there, and pull it out, put it in these rolls, and you would be across, and send it back, push it back, send it back, push it back, until it went this far. Then when it sent it to you, then you would have a pair of rollers that would go into another oven, and go through that oven, and I'm talking about getting up to 2,000 degrees. And then there'd be another set of workers over there to get it out the length you wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd have to set it there, and there's different processes. You'd have to, then you'd shear it and cut it and rough, and then you'd have to put it in annealers, what would soften the steel, and finally get it in, and give it an acid treatment. And then you'd get it after all that, after it's annealed and treatment, and inspect it, and then get more precise on the measurements, and if you want to a certain measurement that would be cutting them there and then they'd ship them.
Was there many government regulations over this? Or was it more or less?
No, like I said, I didn't work there too long. Mm-hmm. At the shipping department. I don't think there was, not like there is now. And no union. You just worked, like I say. Then we got bad, the automobile, this was strictly automobile stock. They would come in real bad. They would come in maybe on a start hauling steel on a Friday afternoon and take it to Flint, Detroit, wherever, and most of the truck. And they'd come in Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And you work practically every weekend. You might work Monday, then you'd be off until you only work 4 days a week. You work the weekends because they stock very little steel most days. Not made for 2 days. So these trucks could start coming in maybe on a Friday or Saturday. And they'd be lined up and you'd load them and the way they go. But usually you'd work on a Saturday, Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever a union trying to get into this?
Oh yeah, this is where the union started. We had a big strike here in 37.
Really?
So I wasn't in the mill at that, but that's when they had a big strike.
Was
in 1937, oh, jeez.
Brutal.
We had vigilantes on the streets.
Really?
Oh, yes. And, well, there, I think it was a legion that these guys that wasn't too far after the war, you know. And they patrolled the streets, and we had quite a time at that time. And they finally, picket line was at Charlotte Avenue comes on East Elm. Back there was a picket. That's where the pickets were. And they went right at the end of that street. And then it got so then they formed the ones that didn't want a union. They formed something, I don't know. And they had police protection and everything else. And they going down there and go to work. Well, it was a big fight and everything else. But finally they got through and that was the as I remember it, it was the about the end of the strike, I think, at that time when they were throwing cars in the river and all that sort of thing, and it got pretty nasty. And they had their police all the time. Finally, I think the mill opened up, but So we didn't need too much after that. And they kept people in there, too, boys, that didn't get out. And they worked in there, most of the supervision, and some people wanted to work. They let them stay in the mill there and work. I don't remember how, I wasn't working at the mill at that time, so I don't know how that was resolved, to tell you the truth. Just what happened there, I don't know.
Was the strike broken?
The strike was broken. They didn't recognize the union at that time, I remember that.
Yeah.
Right after that, I knew that there were strikes like the Ford and GM and places like that, and then the steel mills too, mostly around Pittsburgh, were organized. And I don't think that this mill down here at that time was ever organized. That time I was 37, 38, or 39, I think they sold out to Kelsey Hayes.
Kelsey Hayes?
Kelsey Hayes was in there then, and then during the war, there was a woman coming in there. I was in the church, so I don't know what it was. And then Ford came here about, I would say, 19.